Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. March 21, 2017. In my regular column in Haaretz, my new article, Good News. It's okay to talk about anti-Semitism in America. Because now we can talk about its causes and solutions. In just over a month, more than 100 JCCs and synagogues received bomb threats and were forced to evacuate, 3 Jewish cemeteries were vandalized, 1 synagogue was shot at while people were inside, and swastikas were painted on buildings and cars. I raced from work twice after getting texts saying the kids had all been moved out of the building, said one mother in the Midwest, who asked not to be named so as not to draw more attention from whatever sick people are making these threats. I know it could happen any place, but the fact that lately the calls are happening at the JCC makes you constantly on edge, said Allison Vitagliano, whose 4-year-old son was evacuated from his preschool at the JCC of Central New Jersey. I'm realizing I live in a naive bubble because I don't understand where this hatred is coming from. I knew there was discrimination against Muslims, Mexicans, black people, gay people, but it's strange to me that this is happening to Jewish people. I thought we were past that and we could focus on supporting the other groups who are under attack, said Taylor, a former board member of the preschool at the JCC in Maitland, Florida. I'd be lying if I said that neither of us were scared, said Allison Levy, who asked not to name her child's day school, fearing that it could be targeted again. Monday after school, Honora Gathing's daughter didn't greet her when she got home like she usually does. Instead, she said, we had a code black. The media presents this wave of Jew hatred as a new trend in America, but it is not. During the Obama administration, there were no less than 7,000 anti-Semitic incidents in the U.S., but they went largely unreported by the mainstream media for political reasons. Now that the administration has changed and the media is no longer obliged to protect the White House, we can finally speak openly about anti-Semitism in America and ponder what this means for U.S. Jewry. Hatred like no other. First, we must not be naive, as Taylor put it in the above quote. Anti-Semitism is the oldest, most tenacious hatred, it will outlive all other hatreds. There is a special characteristic to Jew hatred. It is not really hatred of the Jews, but rather anger at the Jews. The reason for this anger stems from our origin and our purpose. The Jewish people is like no other people. Its first manifestation came into existence nearly 4,000 years ago in ancient Babylon. At that time, Abraham, the son of a Babylonian priest called Terah, noticed that something bad was happening to his countryfolk. Despite the abundance of food and water in the land, the Babylonians became increasingly discontent with one another, and gradually grew angry and hostile toward each other, putting their thriving civilization at risk. The book Perkei de Rabbi Ezra describes how the builders of the Tower of Babylon wanted to speak to one another but did not know each other's language. What did they do? The book asks. Each took his sword and they fought each another to the death. Indeed, half the world was slaughtered there, and from there they scattered all over the world. Abraham was deeply troubled by the woes of his people, the Babylonians, and began to reflect on their problem, as Maimonides describes in detail in Mishneh Torah, chapter 1. Finally, Abraham realized that the hatred erupting throughout his country was unstoppable, it was a force of nature. Abraham also realized that people's hatred for each other would only grow over time because of the uncontrollable jealousy innate in human nature. Envy makes us not only want to have enough, but to have more than others and become superior to them. Our sages summarized this trait of human nature with 2 famous truisms. 1. The inclination of a man's heart is evil from his youth, Gen 8:21. 2. A man does not leave the world with half his desire in his hand. Rather, if he has 100, he wants to have 200, and if he has 200, he wants to have 400, Ketubah 3:13. Understanding that he could not stop the intensification of the hatred, Abraham looked for a solution in nature. He observed that in nature, the negative force of destruction is balanced by equally strong positive force of connection. Today we know that protons and electrons would not be able to maintain the balanced structure of an atom without the two forces of attraction and rejection balancing each other out, and that this balance is maintained through all the levels of existence. The revelation of the balance between forces inspired Abraham to formulate a new mode of conducting human society. Instead of trying to enforce laws that suppress the intrinsically egoistic human nature, efforts that invariably fail because our hatred for each other is ever growing, Abraham determined that we should reinforce our unity instead. Rather than focus on the bad, Abraham said, focus on the good, on mercy, love, compassion, and unity. While nature balances the positive and negative forces naturally, humans have to do this consciously. A notion for all the nations. As soon as Abraham realized that he had found the key to the misery of the Babylonians, he began to spread the news wherever he could. Alas, his king, Nimrod, resented Abraham's ideas. Instead of adopting the idea of unity above hatred, Nimrod chased Abraham out of Babylon. But as the expat wandered toward Canaan, he kept speaking of his revelation. According to Maimonides, thousands and tens of thousands assembled around him, and they are the people of the house of Abraham. He planted this tenet in their hearts, composed books about it, and taught his son, Isaac. And Isaac sat and taught and warned, and informed Jacob, and appointed him a teacher, to sit and teach. And Jacob our father taught all his sons, Mishneh Torah, chapter 1. Finally, a tribe that knew the law of unity was formed. Abraham's posterity continued to develop his method until finally, King Solomon capped it with one verse, hate stirs strife, and love covers all crimes, Proverbs 12. Abraham never intended for his idea to be the sole possession of his group. He wished to help the entire Babylonian civilization, and was forced to abandon his plan only because Nimrod forced him out of Babylon. Abraham's disciples knew this and circulated the new ideas to anyone who wished to listen. When Moses led the people of Israel out of Egypt, he, too, wanted to impart the notion of unity over hatred to everyone. In his commentary on the Torah, the Ramchal wrote that Moses wished to complete the correction of the world at that time. However, he did not succeed because of the corruptions that occurred along the way. Since the world could not be corrected at the time, the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob became entrusted with the method and were tasked with serving as a light unto nations. The nation of Israel that was born at the foot of Mount Sinai merited the title nation only after its members committed to unite as one man with one heart. This unique method of formation of a nation cemented their peoplehood so strongly that despite the efforts of the Babylonian, Egyptian, Greek, and Roman empires to destroy them, they have all faded into the annals of history, while the Jews continue to exist. The task that we received, to be a light unto nations, is the task to spread the method of unity above hatred that Abraham discovered and his descendants perfected. The hatred we perceive as anti-Semitism derives from our obligation to the nations to deliver this method of connection, the ability to unite above hatred. Approximately 2,000 years ago, we succumbed to hatred and abandoned our unity, thinking that the Roman culture would be more advantageous to us. In consequence, we not only lost our land, but we also gained the hatred of the nations. Without a light unto nations, they had no hope of covering their own hatred of each other and were therefore doomed to everlasting wars. This is why anti-Semites such as Mel Gibson and retired General William Boykin blame us for all the wars in the world. Without our example, they feel hopeless and turn their anger at us. Throughout the centuries, we have been accused of every conceivable and inconceivable crime. We have been blamed for controlling the media, usury, blood libels of various forms, well poisoning, dominating the slave trade, disloyalty to our host countries, organ harvesting and AIDS spreading. Over the years, communists accused us of creating capitalism, and capitalists accused us of inventing communism. Christians accused us of killing Jesus, and acclaimed French historian and philosopher Frantz Voltaire accused us of inventing Christianity. We have been labeled warmongers and cowards, racists and cosmopolitans, spineless and unbending, and so on and so forth. All of this happened to us because we abandoned our unity. When we are united, we are not only strong, but the world has hope, a light at the end of the tunnel. When we are separated, we are not a Jewish people anymore, but the riffraff that we were before Abraham assembled us into a tribe that knew the path of unity. Our hatred of each other makes us hated. Today's anti-Semitism in America is no different from any other anti-Semitism throughout the ages. It is the anger of the American non-Jews at the Jews for not showing the path of unity. Many people already link the increasing fragmentation in American society to the rise in anti-Semitism. They are correct in this because the people who are supposed to be a role model of unity are role models of tribal hatred instead. Just look at what is happening in our communities. People of different political views cannot spend holidays together and sometimes even divorce over who voted for whom. Our hatred of each other causes Americans to hate us even more. They will end up blaming the Jews for their division, and nothing that the Jews can say will convince them otherwise. If we want to end anti-Semitism in America, then we Jews must first unite among ourselves. Liberal Jews and conservative Jews must rise to the occasion, put aside their differences, and unite in order to save themselves. Otherwise, the hatred that will develop in America will be as powerful, if not more so, than the one that engulfed Germany in the 1930s, and whose consequences we commemorate each year. We can already see this happening. We must not wait until it's too late. Our task is to unite above our differences, just as our forefathers did, and put all else, including politics, aside. Unity in today's political climate may seem impossible, but it is not at all so. Throughout the world, people are realizing that unity above all differences is the key to their happiness. They come together for unity events and discover that same social cement that Abraham discovered nearly 4 millennia ago. The next event to take place in the US will be on May the 4th to the 7th in New Jersey. Nearly 1,000 people of all religions, races, and backgrounds will attend, and I hope that the warmth they will experience there will reinforce their conviction that unity above differences is the only viable way to create a sustainable, prosperous society. Inflamed egoism, the cause of global warming. From the crisis and its solution, Forum in Arosa, 2006, utilizing all forms of mass media, advertising, persuasion and upbringing, the new social perspective must, 1. Condemn egoistic activity openly and firmly, 2. Praise altruistic activity as being of highest value. The topic of giving back to society must resound as the only and the highest social value. Of course, had we received this kind of upbringing from childhood in kindergarten, school and onward through all forms of mass media, newspapers, radio, television, with the topic of giving back to society constantly resounding above the background noise of all other events, then all of humanity would have acquired a completely different form. We have to come to this through the realization of evil, always revealing to a greater and greater degree that not one of our plans will be realized. Man will not be able to realize even his most simple egoistic plans, the desire to succeed, to win, to delight in something. A question arises, why? First, it is necessary to understand that nature has its own plans, according to which we develop. There is nothing to be done about this, we have to follow them instead of trying to create our own. Suddenly a group of people gathers who want to take power. They organize a party and present their program of change for the world, the country, and the people. But where do they get these plans that seem so right to them? Does human society not need to develop according to nature? And would going against it not condemn us to suffering? And still we continue to see in our world how each party and each ruler who come to power for several years ruin what can be ruined, and leaves. And he is replaced by a new party with new pretty promises to fix everything, but it only completes the destruction. No one cares what happens after they leave. There is not enough responsibility or understanding of what needs to be done. There is no awareness that within nature is a specific program of development for human society, just as for every other part. All our research in nature proves that she knows what she is doing and develops everything in accordance with a clear plan, which has been in effect since before the appearance of humans on Earth. Planet Earth evolved according to the laws of development of the inanimate level of nature, after that, the vegetative, animal, and finally, human. The entire evolution was programmed. Inanimate nature plants and animals suffer only as a result of human beings, and if not for us, they would not be suffering. Because there are no egoistic forces in them, they do not resist nature's program, but instinctively obey all her laws. But a human comes to this world in order to develop his egoism and to understand that by doing this he puts himself in opposition to nature. This is done on purpose, in order for him to compare his nature with the rest of nature and come to his own desire to follow her program, which is called the adhesion of creation with the Creator. The work of a Kabbalist is to bring this knowledge to all of humanity. Today all conditions are available for this, both positive and negative. Negative conditions are revealed in the shattering of humanity, the global crisis. Positive conditions are revealed in the global system of connection, the internet, the ability to influence people outside the usual channels of mass media that follow their own selfish goals and propagate the viewpoints of those who pay them. All that needs to be done is to condemn egoistic actions openly and firmly, and praise altruistic actions as being of highest value. Slowly it will reach humanity. The most important point to convey in this explanation is that this comes from the laws of nature, from which we cannot escape. It is not a plan or principles dreamed up by some political party, but are the result of an intensive investigation of nature. And so we are not being asked if we agree with it or not, we are obliged to bring human society into agreement with the laws of nature. If human society enters this process, which is followed by the inanimate, vegetative, and animate levels of nature, then all levels will begin to function correctly. Therefore, if we correct the human being, then there will be no climate catastrophes, threats of global warming, or ice age. Global warming does not depend on the external actions of people or exhaust fumes in the atmosphere, but only on the rise and fall of man. The cause is not in the development of our industrial technology, but in our egoistic interactions between each other, namely, it is the flame of our egoism that is raising the temperature in nature. From the second part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, February 3, 2016, lesson on the topic, Arrows a Document, What is to be Done? Do not sell a captive for money. Torah, Deuteronomy 21:14, and it will be, if you do not desire her, then you shall send her away wherever she wishes, but you shall not sell her for money. You shall not keep her as a servant, because you have afflicted her. The captive is a desire a person exempted from the previous egoistic intention, but is not able to make a correct altruistic intention on. Then he just sends it, so to speak, to deep waters, and it is drifting somewhere. You shall not keep her as a servant, because you have afflicted her means that you rescued her from egoistic intention, you captured it and now you have to fully correct it. That is, to provide this desire with a correct altruistic direction toward the Creator. If you can't make it, leave your desire alone and consider it hovering somewhere. In a certain amount of time it will show up again, and then you will deal with it. Question: what does it mean you shall not sell her for money? Answer: the thing is that you have no right to change one desire to another and thus gain a screen for it. Money in Hebrew is kesef, kisuf, screen, covering. you can't reach any gain from the fact that you didn't finish your correction. But then it comes. Such fluctuations of desire constantly arise in a person. You were confident that with the help of this desire you would now reach the next spiritual level, nearer to the Creator. But it proved to be above your capacities, and you can do nothing about it. The fact is that this is not the woman who is sitting in your tent mourning her parents. This is you yourself connecting with this desire and cutting your hair. This is how a new desire is absorbed within a person, when he is willing to merge with the Creator with its help, but realizes that he's unable to do it. In principle, the Torah is talking about the work with the same desire, which manifests itself gradually, step by step, layer by layer. And at each level, we face problems because we have to realize these desires, see how connected with them we are, how we cannot simply correct them, but need to ask the Creator for help. This is tremendous work. Everybody has to do what he is assigned to according to the root of his soul. From CabTV's Secrets of the Eternal Book, the 26th of September 2016. The precise definition of anti-Semitism. In the news, the Guardian, the government of the United Kingdom, is to formally adopt a definition of what constitutes anti-Semitism. With Prime Minister Theresa May saying the measure will help efforts to combat hate crime against Jews. Question: so who are the anti-Semites? Answer: an anti-Semitic person is a person who doesn't understand the mission of the Jews in this world and therefore hates them instead of directing them toward the right channel and helping them advance. But if he understands the mission of the Jews, for instance as Henry Ford understood it, then this is another problem already. He cannot overcome a fundamental natural anti-Semitism, and, therefore, he was a typical anti-Semite and helped Hitler. At first, Hitler had a positive attitude toward Jews, one could even say he was friendly. He tried every way to try to speak to them rationally, suggesting that they leave Germany and move to Palestine. But they didn't hear him. So he understood that nobody needed those Jews and nobody would stop him or oppose their annihilation. Incidentally, for him this was a big revelation because he thought that the whole world would begin to scream at him and condemn him. But it turned out that, on the contrary, they were even ready to help him. None of the leading nations came out against the genocide, even though they knew very well what was happening. Is it possible to think that billions of people are anti-Semites? I don't know. Or vice versa, is it possible to think about Jews as greater anti-Semites because they hate their role in this world? This is very topical and timeless. Today, among the American Jews, there are very many anti-Semites who are against Israel and Judaism. They shake Judaism off themselves, like a snake that sheds its skin, in an attempt to disguise themselves in every way possible. But in the Torah, it is written that this will not help. I will get to you anywhere, no matter where you may be hiding, says the Creator. And this is true, because Jews are not a nation, but are an accessory to the goal of creation, which that person must carry for the world. But if he doesn't do this, then the world blames him for all of their problems. This is precisely what is happening. We cannot escape from carrying out this mission. The entire world revolves around it. The anti-Semites are right, everything revolves around the Jews, and there is a reason for hatred toward these 15 million people. This is one of the smallest peoples of the world, but look at what they are doing. There are so many problems around them and so many emotions involved with them. Let's hope that the Jews will recognize their mission to show the whole world an example of unity, as is written in the Torah, and you shall love your friend as yourself, Leviticus 19:18. This law of human society must extend to all the inhabitants of the world. Question: the American Jews are now trying to blend in among other peoples. Could the Jewish people disappear? Answer: no, they cannot, because nature itself is conducting this process, arousing a desire in a person to blend in order to show him that this is impossible, and inevitably later, he will have to carry out his role in this world joyously. From CapTV's News with Michael Lateman, the 28th of December 2016. Twelve Tribes in One Nation, Part 3. Question: why all the tribes of the people of Israel have clear boundaries and shouldn't mix with each other? Answer: Israel is one nation that walked in the desert together, but each in his own place, with his own flag. This is how we need to advance, the way they went from Mount Sinai to the land of Israel, organized by the tribes, each with its flag and in the correct connection with others. And it's not about the march through material desert, but about the way to progress and spirituality. There is a Hollywood movie that shows how the Jews walk in the desert simply one after another, but this is a wrong image. In the spiritual advancement, each of the 12 tribes must maintain the correct relationship with others and all the time remain connected: 4 tribes on the right, 4 tribes on the left, and 4 tribes in the middle, Havayah plus Havayah plus Havayah. This entire structure must be preserved. When everyone experiences hindrances and the collective egoism rises, everyone has to make sure that we grow together, in the same form, remaining in the same perception, in the same matrix, just at the increasingly higher level. Question: why marriages between the tribes were forbidden? Answer: because it is necessary to preserve the initial Havayah, the shape of the vessel. The whole nation is like one body. If the body is built in a certain way, head, trunk, arms, and legs, then it is impossible to mix an arm with a leg. Question: these are not arms and legs, but people. Answer: if people from the different tribes will mix, it is even worse than mixing an arm with a leg. It is impossible to mix the brain from the head and the bone marrow from arms and legs. Each of us was created with the specific features, like organs of a material body, and therefore all together we are similar to one organism, one person. The different tribes of Israel are like different organs of one body. Question: it is still unclear why two people can't get married? Answer: when we speak about the tribes of Israel, it isn't about people, but about the organs of one spiritual body, which is the people of Israel. Yet, with the physical bodies you can do anything you want, the Torah doesn't speak about them at all. All the tribes should support each other, as it is written, love your neighbor as yourself. Question: why then they are fenced off from each other and given their own allotment? Answer: how can I help another tribe if I don't belong exactly to the tribe that was assigned to me? Let's say that you belong to the tribe of Naphtali, and I belong to Zebulun. Each tribe has its own specific spiritual work, and I can help another only if I realize myself exactly like Zebulun and you as Naphtali. And for the tribes of Asher and Gad, I must do different work and provide different support, and they in return to me. Imagine 12 people who are in the group, but each of them has their own soul. If we try changing it, we only spoil it. Therefore, we shouldn't change anyone, but only connect between us. None of us has any flaws, the fault is only in the connection between us, and therefore, we need to pay attention only to it, work on it and correct it, in order to reveal the upper force within the corrected connection. From CapTV's New Life, December 1, 2016. Liberation. There are two approaches to life. The first approach is to devote most of our attention to this world, getting as much pleasure out of it as possible. This is why humanity conquers space and explores the depths of an atom. All this is work with the matter. But the wisdom of Kabbalah says that instead of flying to distant stars, we need to delve into the depth of a human being. The world is uncovered within us, we see the world within ourselves. A person perceives the reality with his consciousness, and therefore, by changing it, he changes the reality. Reality is a reflection of our inner qualities. By correcting our inner qualities, we begin to see the spiritual world. And by returning to our original egoistic characteristics, we see this world. That is why even in relation to the Torah there are two approaches. There are those who observe the commandments of the Torah only in their actions, thinking that the Torah describes external observance. And that is why such Torah is called external, because it is observed only through physical actions and words. But there are people called Kabbalists who believe that following the Torah is an internal action, carried out by changing human nature. By working in the group according to the method of Kabbalah and attracting the light that reforms, a person begins to fulfill the Torah and the commandments not only with hands, legs, and words, but through the desire that is corrected with the help of the light and divided into 613 parts. And this why it is said, the opinion of the Torah is opposite to the opinion of the masses. The external approach is also associated with the study of nature by regular sciences, the aspiration to explore the depths of the inanimate, vegetative, and animate levels, and to transform the world by changing nature and governments externally. In contrast, the wisdom of Kabbalah says that if the world is the result of our perception, then it is necessary to correct only our perception, our inner qualities. Only in this manner can we change the world, humanity, man, and all of reality to such an extent that we will begin to experience the world as eternal, perfect, and limitless. For this reason, the opinion of the masses differs from that of the Torah, and there is nothing that can be done about this. It is not possible to bring them together. Little by little the upper light operates on humanity, advancing it toward the need to acknowledge the truth and realize that all of reality exists within. There is nothing outside of us, everything is perceived within our awareness. The passage from the general worldview, accepted by all humanity that perceives the world as external to them, to the world as a product of perception within human awareness, is called liberation. The eyes of the masses will open and they will begin to approach the truth. Then the wisdom of Kabbalah will be revealed not only to specific individuals, but to all, and it will explain to all of humanity its mission and the purpose of man in this reality. Everyone will realize that our world is not this planet Earth, where we are destined to be born and die, but that it is a small stopover station, a starting point, from which we have to begin to develop further. From the Daily Kabbalah Lesson, the 30th of January 2017, lesson on the topic, The Mind of the Landlords is Opposed to the Reason of the Torah. My thoughts on Twitter, the 20th of March 2017. Who doesn't want to be happy? International Day of Happiness. It's cute when people who know nothing about Kabbalah and have no attainment of the upper world start dispensing judgment about it. The goal of creation is to unite the nations. This is the work of the Jews. Anti-Semitism is sent to force them to do it. The UN rescinded its accusation of apartheid toward Israel, but more will follow until the Jews reveal the method of correction to the world. Once again, ministers from Israel's left and right were invited to our annual Kabbalah convention, and were amazed. How can we understand that we are on the right track? Question: how is it possible to understand that you are on the right track and will achieve spiritual perfection in the future? Are there any signs of this? Answer: to do this you need a teacher, books, a group, and persistence with the lessons. You can then be sure that you are on the right track and will achieve the goal. From the Kabbalah lesson in Russian, the 1st of January 2017. The Blessings of Moses. Question: what is the spiritual meaning of the blessings that Moses gave before his death? Answer: the Torah tells us allegorically that when Moses sent the people to the land of Israel, he climbed Mount Nebo, saw the land from there, and blessed it. From the point of view of Bina, which Moses symbolizes, he connected with Malkhut, the people of Israel, and transmitted all of his power to it so that the people could begin to rise from a state of Malkhut in the land of Israel, which had already been a different power of Malkhut, to Bina. This was the blessing through which he transferred power to the land and to the people, and the people had to implement them. The implementation includes clarification of the nature and the sequence of the corrective actions, as well as preparation of the people for movement and advancement in different forces, tribes, to individual people, tens, hundreds, and so forth. This made it clear how they could continue to gather into greater unity in their constantly growing egoism and desire called the Land of Israel that was revealed by them and aim straight toward the Creator. They began to fight in order to direct their desires toward bestowal and love, above the egoism that was depicted by the seven peoples, which were manifested in the seven structures, Hesed, Gvura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, and Malkhut. This was serious work, but Moses no longer had any connection with it because he was only the characteristic of Bina, and he only transmitted love and bestowal to the people of Israel. Working between the characteristic of bestowal and the zealous, powerful egoistic desire, the Land of Israel will be the next level, Joshua ben Nun. This force would lead the people forward toward the Land of Israel. From the Kabbalah lesson in Russian, September 4, 2016. Answers to your questions, Part 162. Question: there are burning candles in the picture at the end of every morning lesson. You talk about 8 candles, but there are 9 in the picture. Does it mean anything? Answer: the 9th candle is called Shamash, meaning a servant. It is the most important one. Question: Moses led the Jews through the desert for 40 years, and during this period their shoes did not wear out. What does it mean from the point of view of Kabbalah? Answer: their screen, Masach, never failed them, they always were above egoism. The Code of the Torah. Question: if the code of the Torah is similar to a computer code, shouldn't there be some device where it could be compiled and run? How do we activate this code? Answer: we don't activate it. This code is already operating. It has its own internal mechanism, the light, that drives it. The question is, how can we adapt to this action so that it will manage us? To do this, we must become Kabbalists. The wisdom of Kabbalah explains that there is a code before us, a flowing river of information. If a person wants to enter it and swim along with it, he must prepare himself, enter it carefully, and then gradually swim to the center of the river and find himself within the eternal flow. From the Kabbalah lesson in Russian, September 4, 2016. New Life number 819. Jewish culture, the Mezuzah.
Hello and thanks for being with us here on the New Life Show, a series of talks with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yael Shadarel. Hello. Today we'd like to learn from Dr. Lightman how to make our life as safe as possible. Be with us, Yael, please. Yeah, in Judaism, there are different customs and symbols that it's common to see as means that protect the person, like the mezuzah that protects the person and his home, and the prayers, like the prayers that we pray, the traveler's prayer, the home blessing, the business blessing, things that are supposed to protect us. Psalms, keeping the Shabbat, that the Shabbat protects the person. And on this show, we'd like to examine whether these means really protect us, and what is it about each of these means that really does it, that protects us and our life. And I'd like to open with a question: are there really such means that protect a person from life's uncertainties, that protect them from danger and direct them to good? No more than an inner feeling that softens a person, soothes them, gives them a certain sense of security, meaning it's only something psychological. It does not influence any of the occurrences of life in any way. What am I basing this on? Mezuzah, tefillin, talit, all the different religious or non-religious forms that we can talk about, we see it all from Abraham. What did he do? What did Abraham do? He broke all the idols, all of them, meaning all the external symbols that can influence our destiny, he broke them. This is actually the beginning of his spiritual path. Therefore, everything that a person has today, that he believes in different objects, external actions, it is all idolatry. Still, I'd like to start with the mezuzah. These are signs. There are other things about this, that what we do, according to Judaism, it's not in order to give us a sense of security that if I kiss the mezuzah, everything's going to be fine. That's untrue. Why did the sages make it so for the masses? So I won't forget that I'll be more connected to Judaism and all these things, but it's not that by this I change my destiny. Not to forget what? Not to forget about connection with others, the mitzvot, the Torah, all those things that belong to the people of Israel, but that I throw a shekel into a box, into a charity box before I step on the bus so the bus won't explode, that's idolatry. Because I'm disconnected from the Creator, and by that shekel, Israeli currency, I buy a good attitude towards myself. That's gross. But depending for whom? For the masses, for the populace, we have to go down to their level nonetheless. For them it's good. It's not the matter of the shekel that he gives to someone or to something. That's not important. What's important is that by that he's connected to a system of people nonetheless and so on. There are positive things about it. I'm not making fun of it. I'm not disregarding it. On the one hand, it's worthwhile doing. On the other hand, everything that is good on this level, towards a higher level of development, is considered idolatry. I want to talk about Jewish symbols. The mezuzah. I'll even say about myself as a secular person. This doesn't only apply to religious people. It was important for me when I moved to my new home to put up mezuzahs. Even my husband, he chose very special parchments, klafim, that go inside the mezuzah, so that it will all be kosher and so on. And there is a sentence that says in the Midrash, a home that has a mezuzah is protected by the Creator. What is it about the mezuzah? And is there maybe something more internal about it that does protect those inside the house? No, and nothing. Not even on a deeper level? On a deeper level, of course not. But on the external level, psychologically wise, it gives a person a sense of security, a better feeling, more comfortable. What is man, all in all? You're a psychologist. You know that it's important for a person. A person lives his life, and this way he calms himself down, like a sedative. But that's it. If a person really wants to be protected under the upper force, he has to study the upper force, he has to be connected with the upper force, he has to know what and how does he do in order to correctly keep the desire of the upper force. It's not that what the person wants, but in accordance with the purpose of creation, the purpose of the entire system. What does he have to do? And if he'll do it, certainly he will be favorable in the eyes of the upper system, called the Creator, and this way he will promise himself a good, nice, and quick advancement. So if I understand what you're saying, there are two levels of connection. There's the fundamental level for the masses, where a person doesn't connect with anything, but he works instinctively. He's being operated from above, and he always responds instinctively, according to what comes from nature. What does it mean that he's operated from above? I don't know. I got a prick. Ouch! The prick comes from above, and my instinctive response comes from beneath, from myself. Oi! This is how we're operated all the time. So there's a system that's operating us in any given moment, at any given moment. Yes, there is an endless amount of strings pulling each and every one of us, and this is how we exist inside the system. And there's a higher level that no longer pertains to the masses, but it speaks about a connection, which is a connection with the upper force. Yes. And you say that for this, there's no need for any external objects, but it's an inner process that a person goes through. Right. Still, many times I hear you say that there is a connection between all the things that exist in our world and certainly the Jewish symbols. They have a certain root and branch, which is much deeper, but not that they work this way. That if I take a mezuzah, then there is an upper force in it. God forbid, no. But it points at a certain upper force that by the symbols of the mezuzah I can say what is the klaf, what is the writing, what is the text itself, and the way it's written, and who wrote it, and so on. By this, from this, I can learn about the source, the upper source of the mezuzah, that there's a special force in nature called mezuzah, and this force protects the home. The home is called the soul. So there is the soul, and there is the mezuzah in the soul, and this is how I learn these things, but not that it's in my house, and there's the mezuzah, and it's holy, but what it points at in the spiritual world, at the special role of the Creator that the Creator has over the souls, that's called holy. In this world, there's nothing holy. So we learned that our home is the soul. You're saying that it actually tells us about certain parts in the spiritual world. The physical mezuzah tells us about much deeper things that exist in the spiritual world. It's only a sign. It has no connection to the spiritual world. A sign for what? A sign that if I build my soul, I build it under a special protection called mezuzah. What does it mean to build the soul? To build the soul, it means that I have to restrict my desire, put a masach screen over it, and oh, chazel, reflected light. What are all these things? These are corrections. And with my desire, I have to connect to at least 9 other people for us to be 10 together, a minyan, a congregation of 10, and through our correct connection, we build a soul, a home. The soul is as if a man's home. Suppose. And what is the klaf, the parchment inside the mezuzah? This parchment is against the upper white light. And what does that white light do, and how is it related to the soul? The parchment is inside the soul, the upper light. And what is its role in the spiritual system? The upper light enlivens everything. I want to put things in the right order. You can't arrange these things. You'll only get confused. We can't learn anything this way, and this approach is incorrect. It won't give you anything. Everyone will come out confused. So, can you arrange these things for us? I don't want to talk in this direction at all, because for this, we have to open up many, many things and to gradually approach them. Okay, so maybe I'll ask a simple question. Why does it suddenly talk about a home, a mezuzah? I'm saying that all the symbols in this world are only symbols. And Abraham, he explains that he burned and broke all of these signs, these symbols. Why? Because people related upper forces to these signs. They bowed to them. I can't turn to the mezuzah, kiss it, and say, I kiss it because there is an upper force in it, and now the upper force is protecting me, thanks to the fact that I bought it and that I'm kissing it now. There are people that say that kissing the mezuzah is idolatry. Right? So my question isn't even about that. My question is simple. As a Jew, I'm commanded to put up a mezuzah on my doorpost. Why? In order for you to have a sign for all the spiritual actions that are also partially related to this action called mezuzah. Take the writings of the Ari, Shara Kavanot, the gate of intentions, and start learning from there what a mezuzah is. In order for me to have a symbol for the spiritual actions that I have to perform, and only these words, spiritual actions that I have to perform, what is that? These are actions of connection between people above their individual egos, where by that connection, they can form a place for the revelation of the upper force, the force of bestowal, the force of love, for it to dwell among them. What you just said, that's considered to perform a spiritual action? Yes. So to perform a spiritual action is to connect with other people above my individual ego in a way of love. Yes. If I did that, that's considered spiritual? Yes. And it's the strongest and best action. Okay. If I do this, and I understand that it's my relation towards other people, right? By this I operate, activate something that protects me? Of course. But then you won't be thinking that it's protecting you, because you're already activating the force of love towards others. Your entire inclination is to help others, live in them, provide them with all they need. This is what it means to love others. You have a chair, you have a pillow, you give it to the other. And this will protect me in life? Yes, that's all there is. And this is what the previously said, that the mezuzah is a symbol for spiritual actions that you have to perform. And there is a special force in nature called mezuzah, and it will protect your soul. Right? Yes. So please explain this with relation to what you just said. If I want to operate this force called mezuzah for it to protect my soul, what do I have to do? It's in order to remind you, as it says, when you go to sleep and when you wake up, meaning that I remind myself by different daily actions in each and every moment through different things which Judaism presents me with, and let's call it burdens me with, to give blessings and different actions and to keep kosherness and the mikveh, the different prayers, a thousand different things. It said that Judaism is truly a murderous religion. I talk to representatives of other religions, and they say, how do you live your life? We don't know. So what's the goal of all of it? To remind us to all the time be connected to the upper force. You said that the connection between people, two things. First of all, that the connection between people is what eventually brings the force of love and leads to being protected. What's the connection between the force of love and that eventually I'll feel some kind of providence in this world, that someone's watching over me? Love another as thyself is the great rule of the Torah, meaning it is the peak of human development. The peak of human development. There's nothing beyond that. Why? Because this way I'm included inside the other, and I do everything that the other needs. And this is the law of the integral system, that this is how all of its components have to be connected. But how does it protect me? So there's no to protect. By this, I sustain, I keep the integral system, and I'm a component in it. So of course it protects me. I can never protect myself. I keep myself by correctly connecting with others. Why? Because I'm connected with them. But why does that protect you? You're correctly connected to the system. This I understand. But I'm nourished by them. They actually form all of my states. Them? Yes, because I'm connected with them. Imagine that I'm interconnected with many, many people. Now, if these connections won't be good, I suffer to the point I want to die. If I'll make these connections good, on my part, the upper force that's operating inside the system, even if the other people that I'm doing good things towards them, and even if to begin with they're incapable and they're not directed at doing good things in return, but the upper force is operating inside the system and will direct them to correctly behave towards me. How will I know that I'm working towards others in a good way? Because that force is fulfilling the system and I'm in unison with that force in the same direction with it. By this, I become like the upper force by trying to love others. Who's going to tell the force about that? It's inside the system. No one has to, because that force is operating on me, and I, as much as I can, want to become like it in return. And what does it have to do with protection? Because by that, I operate the upper protection. I become like the upper force. What could be safer than that? I, by that, as if enter the upper womb. What place can be safer? So that force will protect me? For sure. I determine that. When I become like it, I cancel myself. I cancel my ego. What do you mean to cancel the ego? I stop exploiting others for my own benefit? Yeah, I don't think about myself, but I only work according to the desire of the others. Then by that I perform an action where I resemble the upper and enter the upper in a minimum way. And that means that's considered that I'm already inside it, like an embryo inside his mother's womb. And what can be safer than that? So where is the mezuzah in all of this? You said that it symbolizes something that protects the soul. The mezuzah symbolizes Havaya, Yud-Kei, Vav-Kei. There are four parts to it, which symbolize the upper system, where a person that wants to resemble the Creator, he's included in that system of the complete Havaya. This is his home, this is his womb, and this is how he develops. What is the system of Havaya that the mezuzah symbolizes? It is the attitude of the Creator towards us, which is what? An attitude that includes all the forces, all the rules, a good attitude, where I, by my love towards others, I equalize with the Creator's love towards others, and in that we're together, we hug with each other. Why isn't he hugging me now? Because you're not in equivalence with him. What are you? You disrespect him, you're opposite to him, you're unwanted. Who's he? The general force of the system. Nature. Nature. And what does he have to do with the love you talked about? Because he relates to everyone with love, this force. So why doesn't he protect everyone? He does. Only his goal is to bring everyone to get to know him, so everyone will discover him, identify with him. Why? Because by this, they are no longer operated, not understanding anything about life, but they rise to a higher, perfect and eternal level. Still, I don't understand why is it customary to put a mezuzah on the doorpost in Judaism? In order to remind us that there is an upper force that you depend on, that you have to identify with, that you have to perform the same actions as he does, to identify with him, this is what it's about? What does it mean? To be like him, as he is merciful, so are you, and so on. It says so. So this is where the matter of love comes from, that you're saying that I have to love like he does. Yeah. Everything's interconnected. Don't worry. It's really, eventually, very simple. Simple? Yeah. Okay, so eventually the mezuzah represents a certain force of love and connection, and so does each and every corporeal mitzvah. It points at the need to perform it spiritually, internally wise. You're saying that what you just explained about the mezuzah actually pertains to everything that we know about Judaism. There is no action in a person's life that he can simply do it without any goal, without the connection with upper force, but it's preferable for him to do it only in order to identify, to connect with upper force, to become like the upper force, because that nears him to the revelation. What you talked about, that has to do with the person's day-to-day life? Of course. What does it have to do with a person's day-to-day life? This I don't understand. I wake up in the morning, I send my kids off to school, I come back from work, I make sure that my boss doesn't kill me at work, this, that, see my wife in the evening, make sure that the kids are happy, that everyone's fine, that I'll sleep a good sleep and not get ulcer. How does this repeating schedule with success and the failures and the achievements and the this and that, how does all this have to do with identifying with the upper force? You said that this will protect you in life. What does it have to do with life altogether? Where does it fit in a person's schedule? You used to keep the orders of the upper force unknowingly, unconsciously, without knowing who's operating you. You simply ran around, and that's it. Like my grandchild has this toy railway station, and he operates it with a remote control. Yeah. And inside the train, you have a small monkey sitting inside there, an elephant, and so on. So, this is how we are operated. Me. Yeah. And you're running and doing, and it seems to you that you're doing everything. Why are you operated this way? That's the matter of the concealment. If you'll start feeling who's operating you and what for and why, and how can I identify with everything that he takes me through, then you'll start feeling that you're not simply operated, but specifically by identifying with these actions, you can attain the one that's operating you, and then by that you start seeing your life from his level, and then in each and every action that you perform, by it you want to get in touch with the operator. Can you give me an example? I told you what my day-to-day life looks like. What can I ascribe it with, what you're talking about? In each and every moment, to whatever you do. What am I supposed to do each and every moment? I mean, besides my life, is there something else that I have to do? Yes, inner work. What is inner work? Inner work, it means that everything that you do in life is in order to discover the upper force that's operating you. And then, in each and every moment, you start feeling how it's operating. It's not simply so. Just because you heard about it, then that's it. From this moment and on, that's how it is. But you have to advance towards it by the group, by studying, by getting to know the system. It takes a few years. Okay, so let's get back to the protection. A person feels very uncertain in life. Today, people really feel that I have no idea what's going to happen the next moment. But it doesn't matter. The main thing for me is to be in connection, in adhesion with the operator. What do I care? What does he do? I don't mind the next moment. The main thing is not to part with him. And this kind of approach protects me. It gives you an anchor in life, and you don't need anything besides that, because you are cleaved on to the upper mind. Were I to tell you, look, today they're selling insurances for everything. I have an insurance for everything in life. I want to buy the general policy that will give me the best kind of protection. What is it? It is the connection with the upper force. This is what the wisdom of Kabbalah offers a person. It is the best possible insurance company that includes everything. And what about someone who's not religious? It has nothing to do with religion. What then? It has to do with the desire to come to know the operating force. I don't even call that force God or the Creator, in order not to confuse people. Where can I find that force? It's operating me. You can find that force inside our heart by studying the wisdom of Kabbalah. It's not simple. It takes time. Our time's up. Dr. Lightman, in conclusion, know the Creator, your God, and serve Him. We'll sleep on it, and we'll talk about it next time. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ed. Thanks for being with us. Till next time, all the best.